Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Wednesday, June 10th, and 91 years ago today, a surgeon in Akron, Ohio named Dr. Bob Smith took his last drink, and he never had another one. The reason he stopped wasn't rehab or medication, or even a medical breakthrough. It was a conversation with a stockbroker from New York named Bill Wilson, who had shown up in Akron on a failed business trip and was standing in the hotel lobby trying to decide between the bar and the phone booth. He chose the phone booth, called a series of local clergy asking if they knew any alcoholics he could talk to, and was eventually connected to Dr. Bob. Their first conversation lasted 6 hours. Out of that meeting came Alcoholics Anonymous, which is now the most widely used addiction treatment program on the planet. 2 million members, over 180 countries, but no professional staff, no fees, no formal leadership, and a structure so simple that it runs on coffee, folding chairs, and the willingness of strangers to tell each other the truth. About 10% of American adults have walked into an AA meeting at some point in their lives. That's the same percentage as left-handed people. Okay, so let's get to the story. Bill Wilson had been a promising Wall Street stockbroker before alcohol destroyed his career. By his late 30s, he had been hospitalized multiple times at the Towns Hospital in Manhattan, a facility specializing in drug and alcohol addiction. His doctor there, William Silksworth, told him something that was radical for the time. Alcoholism wasn't a moral failure or a lack of willpower. It was a disease, a physical compulsion combined with a mental obsession, and treating it required treating both. Wilson got sober through a Christian fellowship called the Oxford Group, which emphasized honesty, confession, and surrendering to God's plan. But he kept relapsing until he had what he described as a spiritual experience in his hospital room, a moment of clarity that he said removed his compulsion to drink permanently. The problem was staying sober alone. Wilson discovered that talking to other alcoholics, sharing his experience and listening to theirs, was the thing that kept him from going back. When a business deal fell through in Akron in the spring of 1935, he found himself in a hotel lobby staring at the bar. But he didn't reach for a drink. He reached for the phone because he knew if he could find another alcoholic to talk to, he could get through the night. Dr. Bob Smith was a well-respected surgeon and a member of the same Oxford group, but he couldn't stop drinking despite years of trying. When Wilson showed up at his door on May 12, 1935, Smith agreed to a 15-minute conversation. It lasted 6 hours. Wilson didn't lecture him. He didn't preach. He just told his own story. One alcoholic talking to another. And something about that exchange worked in a way that professional treatment and religious fellowship hadn't. Dr. Bob had his last drink on June 10, 1935. That date is considered the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. The two of them started holding meetings for alcoholics at Akron City Hospital. It took 4 years to get 100 sober members. The whole thing could have died right there, a small Midwestern support group with 100 people and no money. Then John D. Rockefeller Jr. got involved, investigated the program, and was impressed by the results. So he made a decision that shaped everything that followed. He deliberately limited his funding because he believed money would corrupt the movement. Self-sufficiency, he argued, was essential to its integrity. It might be the most consequential act of not giving money in the history of philanthropy. In 1939, Wilson and the early members published a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, known as the Big Book, which laid out the 12 steps. The steps are spiritual, but not denominational. Admit you're powerless over alcohol. Believe a higher power can restore you. Take a moral inventory of yourself. Make amends to people you've harmed. And carry the message to other alcoholics. The language was written for the person shaking in a hospital bed at 3 a.m., not for researchers or clergy. The simplicity was deliberate. Think about how unusual the organizational structure is, or more accurately, the lack of one. 2 million members in over 180 countries, and nobody runs it. There is no CEO, there's no board of directors, no dues, no membership requirements beyond wanting to stop drinking, and nobody gets paid. Meetings are run by volunteers in church basements and community centers, connected to each other only through a shared set of traditions and a general services office in New York that publishes literature. 60,000 local groups worldwide operating on the principle that one alcoholic helping another is the fundamental unit of recovery, and anything you layer on top of that risks getting in the way. This is also why AA was so hard to study scientifically for decades. You can't run a clean, randomized trial on a program that's anonymous, voluntary, and has no standardized dosage. How many meetings per week count as treatment? What's the control group for a peer support network? For years, the scientific community's position was essentially, it seems to help people, but we can't prove it rigorously, which left a gap between AA's massive real-world adoption and its thin evidence base. In 2020, a team led by Stanford researcher John Kelly published a review through the Cochrane Library, which is considered the gold standard for medical evidence. They analyzed 27 studies covering 10,000 participants. The findings surprised a lot of skeptics. AA-based programs produced higher rates of continuous abstinence than cognitive behavioral therapy and other professional treatments. 42% of people in AA-based programs remained completely abstinent at 1 year, compared to 35% for CBT. That sounds like a clear win, and many headlines treated it that way. But the story is a bit more complicated, and the complications are worth understanding because they get at something fundamental about how we define success in addiction treatment. The 2020 review measured abstinence, total sobriety, as the primary outcome. So by that measure, AA wins. But a previous Cochrane review in 2006, looking at similar data, found no clear evidence that AA was effective because it used broader measures. Quality of life, reduced drinking, overall functioning. AA's philosophy is all or nothing. You're either sober or you're not. And if you take one drink after 5 years of sobriety, you're back to day one. Critics argue that this framework, while motivating for some, can actually make relapses worse. Research by Miller and Heather found that people who believe in the disease model of alcoholism, which AA teaches, were more likely to relapse explosively when they did drink, because they'd internalized the idea that one drink meant total loss of control. Addiction treatment may be the only area of mental health where a 99% reduction in symptoms is considered failure. If someone went from drinking every day to drinking twice a year, most doctors would call that a remarkable improvement. AA's framework calls it a relapse. The practical reality is that AA works extremely well for some people and it doesn't work at all for others. And the people it does not work for example, people who are atheist or agnostic and can't connect with the higher power component, people who respond better to medication like naltrexone or acamprosate, and people who want to reduce their drinking rather than eliminate it entirely, have historically had fewer options because AA's dominance crowded out alternatives. Programs like Smart Recovery, LifeRing, and medication-assisted treatment are growing but remain far less accessible than AA, which has meetings in virtually every town in America. The dominance goes beyond voluntary attendance. Courts across the country routinely mandate AA participation as part of sentencing for DUI and drug offenses. That raises a question that's been litigated repeatedly. AA's 12 steps reference a higher power, and the program grew out of a Christian fellowship. Multiple federal courts have ruled that government-mandated AA attendance violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, and yet the practice continues in most jurisdictions because judges don't have enough secular alternatives to send people to. AA also didn't stay contained to alcohol. The 12-step model became the template for how America treats addiction and compulsive behavior across the board. Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, all of these run on the same structure Wilson and Dr. Bob built in a living room in 1935. One program designed for one problem became the operating system for recovery in the United States. The Stanford researcher who led the 2020 Cochrane Review, Keith Humphreys, said something that stuck with me. Early in his career, he dismissed AA. "How dare these people do things that I have all these degrees to do," he said. Then he spent decades studying it and concluded that its power comes from exactly the thing that makes it hard to study: human connection. One person telling another person the truth about themselves in a room full of people who understand for free, forever. No institution in the world has replicated that at AA's scale. The answer to why it's lasted 91 years might just be that connection is the treatment, and everything else is an approximation of it. So whether you're an AA, you know someone in AA, or you just find it fascinating, here's how to think about it. Alcoholics Anonymous was founded 91 years ago today when a stockbroker and a surgeon discovered that one alcoholic talking to another with total candor was more effective than anything either had tried professionally. 2 million members, 180 countries, no staff, no fees, no leadership. A 2020 Cochrane review found it outperforms cognitive behavioral therapy for abstinence, though critics note it can make relapses worse and doesn't serve people who need medication or a secular approach. Courts mandate it despite church-state concerns. Every other 12-step program in existence grew out of it. Rockefeller investigated it and deliberately withheld funding because he thought that money would ruin it. Honestly, I kind of love that. Anyway, the whole thing runs on coffee, folding chairs, and strangers telling each other the truth. 91 years later, nothing has replaced it. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.